This is The Guardian.
Just a warning, this episode contains references to suicide and violence.
Last week, Rishi Sunak launched his party's election campaign, and immediately one of his big pledges to deport people to Rwanda took centre stage.
If I'm re-elected as Prime Minister on the 5th of July, these flights will go.
We wanted to get under the rhetoric and hype and find out what the real-life impact of this rushed and cruel policy has already been. 1 month on from it becoming law, what impact has the Rwanda bill had on the people and system it's aimed at? I'm John Harris, and you're listening to Politics Weekly UK for The Guardian. It's Monday morning, and I'm outside the Best Western Hotel in Peckham in South London. Now, as soon as Frankie, our producer, got her recording kit out, a security person appeared on the doorstep. He's now glaring at me and talking into his walkie-talkie. Clearly, this is not your average tourist hotel. And you can tell that even more from the number of bikes parked outside. People live here, effectively. People are awaiting decisions on their asylum applications. And on May the 2nd, shortly after the Rwanda bill was passed, something remarkable happened here, in response to which a message went out on people's social media channels straight away. And it said, urgent, support needed now. Huge police presence in Peckham SE15. Large numbers of arrests for absolutely no reason. We will sit down and surround the police vans until our friends are released and safe. No one left behind. We're here to meet one of the people who was involved in that intervention.
What happened 3 weeks ago was that our friends were in trouble. Through no fault of their own, they were asked to be relocated to a barge called the Bibby Stockholm.
Sure, in Dorset, a long way from here.
Yeah, these people, they're incredible people. And they use the local college, they use like the local shops. Like, they've had bonds, or they've created bonds here, which are real. And so when they were being relocated or asked to be relocated, a lot of us didn't like that. And so we came out.
So when you say that 100 or so people who all live around here came out, just describe what happened.
When the coach arrived, a group of us just blocked the coach and assembled around it and said, you know, we're not taking our friends. Basically, it went on social media and more people came and joined us. The police arrived. There was a bit of a standoff. We wanted to ensure that our friends were safe before we left, but we weren't getting any confirmation of that. So it went on and on and on. And eventually, the police came in larger numbers and started grabbing people.
How many people who were here are now in Dorset on the Bibby Stockholm?
Zero. We managed to stop.
You did it?
We did it. We stopped. The police came in numbers, but they basically weren't able to take anyone that day. The coach ended up driving off with a flat tyre. Don't know how that happened. And
what a mystery.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we basically kept our friend safe.
For now, right?
For now.
Because in the front of your mind must be the sense that you could get a text message now, like today.
Yeah.
And exactly the same thing, if you were going to stop this happening, would have to happen again.
Yes, you're right. It can happen again. We are just keeping watch, and we're also sharing information amongst other local residents who are concerned as well.
I mean, obviously, you can go on doing that. Local people can go on doing that. What does success look like ultimately for you?
Really, what we want for our friends is for them to be able to be given asylum. We want them to be treated with dignity, as they should. These are some, as I say, amazing people who have endured absolutely mind-blowing things. But we want the punitive treatment of people who are seeking asylum to end. The power that the Home Office has to create that fear of uncertainty is despicable. And what I think we've done here is show that local people have power as well.
Here are five things I'm doing to stop the boats. First, I'm bringing in new laws that will mean if you come to the UK illegally, you can't stay. no matter how hard you try. Second, I've secured a deal with France that will help stop the boats at source before they cross the channel. Third, I've increased raids by 50% to clamp down on illegal workers. Fourth, I'm ending the farce of illegal migrants.
How did you feel when it was first sort of put on the agenda? I'll be honest, I couldn't sort of quite believe my ears. I went along with the reported comments of the current Home Secretary when he said it was batshit. I mean, that's the way it appeared to me.
Yeah, I think that the government felt they were running out of options and this was an eye-catching thing, which they hoped would sound to voters as if they really meant business.
Diane Taylor is a Guardian reporter who's been covering immigration policy for years.
Effectively, they were going to punish asylum seekers who presumed to exercise their rights under the Geneva Convention to come here. The Home Office insists that Rwanda isn't a punishment, but that's certainly not the way asylum seekers see it.
Well, they can't have it both ways either, because they talk about Rwanda as a disincentive.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There must be something yeah. sort of not quite right about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it doesn't quite all fit together.
What happened to the first flight? It was meant to take off in June 2022. So if you can crunch it down, how do we get from that sort of failure to here?
Although it was very high profile, the first flight. It was nowhere near as high profile as it is now. And Rwanda at that point hadn't been through all the domestic courts, such as Court of Appeal, Supreme Court, etc. None of that had happened. And what happened with that flight is most of the asylum seekers on the flight did their own individual legal challenges and got their own individual tickets cancelled on the basis of their own individual circumstances. One asylum seeker went to the European Court and a finding was made which was helpful to that asylum seeker. And then the handful of other asylum seekers who hadn't been taken off the plane relied on that interim measure.
One of those people earmarked back in 2022 for deportation to Rwanda was a man we got in touch with who's currently living in the Midlands. So I will be asking you questions via Tahir, the interpreter. But thank you for being here. He arrived here after fleeing violence in his home country of Kurdistan. His words are being interpreted by a translator. I'm keen to know your story as a refugee. When you were in Kurdistan, you were the victim of violence. That's correct?
Yes.
And how easy was it to get to the UK from Kurdistan?
It's not easy. It's very difficult. You are going through a journey that you're going through everywhere illegally. I never wanted to leave my country willingly. I had to. Nobody wants to leave their country without having any problem, especially in this way, because it's a very difficult way. Nobody should take that route to come to any country.
How long did it take?
PNG. It took me about 9 days. I left 5th of May 2022 and I arrived here 14th of May 2022.
And did you get a boat across the English Channel? Yes.
Yes. I didn't come to this country willingly. I didn't even know that I'm where I'm going till I crossed the water and crossed the channel and I arrived here. That's when I find out that I'm in the UK. I wasn't even aware where I'm going.
Wow. Okay. And not long after this, from what I understand, it looked like you were going to be put on a flight to Rwanda in June 2022. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Without being interviewed or questioned, regardless of why, what's the reason why I have come here or claim asylum, they told me, we have a ticket for you to go to Rwanda on 14th of June. You will be sent to Rwanda.
And in that moment, how did you feel?
How should I feel? How one person will feel when you haven't done anything, you haven't committed any crime, you have come and seek asylum here, but they will say that they're going to send you to a country which is not safe, a country that has been through war, a country that has many things has happened that is not safe for any individual. And you're telling him that you're going to send them there.
And then what happened? So how come that plan was not carried out and he remained in the UK?
Because I'm handicapped myself. I'm a special need person. The person who I fled my country because of him, he had shot my hand. And because of that, I cannot use my hand.
Okay, so you remained in the UK. Tell me about your experiences since then. So how has life been since 2022?
How to explain it to you? On itself, being away from your home country, being away from your family, it will affect your mental health, and it's very difficult.
How many people do you expect will be on these flights by, say, the end of the autumn?
Despite the humiliation of this first flight being cancelled, the government doubled down on the policy. In yet another blow to the bill, in November 2023, the Supreme Court ruled that the policy was unlawful. The government pushed through a special parliamentary act to circumvent that ruling. Eventually, that made it through after bouncing back and forth between the Commons and the Lords.
To give everyone a sense of the preparation work that's gone into this, and as much as I am able to say about the future, and that's for a very good reason, it's clear that there is a loud minority of people who will do absolutely anything and everything to disrupt this policy from succeeding.
Now, it's law. Diane Taylor says it's likely to be a key point of contention in this election.
The government says they've bulletproofed the legislation by saying that Rwanda is a safe country, even though the overwhelming evidence is to the contrary.
In terms of the politics of it, the government might sort of relish legal challenges because that's what they define the policy against. Oh, there they go again, meddling lefty Remainer lawyers and all that.
Yeah, I mean, if the second first flight doesn't take off, then the government can blame those pesky judges or the lefty lawyers or whatever. And there are still many roadblocks. It really does seem with the Rwanda scheme that the government has sort of moved through a maze and got itself twisted in thousands of different directions, when the simple answer is to move in a straight line and determine people's asylum claims in line with international law.
And just remind me of the sort of scheme that the government is hyping up and says that a plane will take off and fulfill. The cost per asylum seeker, that's been in the news a lot. Just remind me of what we're looking at.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, the estimate for the scheme, some of which has already been handed over to Rwanda, is around 500 million. You know, it keeps changing. I have seen figures saying it's going to cost more than $1 million per asylum seeker, but I'm not sure the maths on that.
Right, okay.
The sums will differ depending on how many people end up going there.
Yeah, but you look at it and you think, well, that'd pay for a lot of schools and hospitals. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Or it would actually be more efficiently spent on improving the workings of the asylum system as currently constructed.
Yeah, right? It certainly doesn't seem cheap.
In May this year, shortly after the Rwanda bill was made law, the government ramped up its immigration raids and invited the media to come along.
Immigration.
The reality is that the culture of fear created by the Rwanda bill has meant many asylum seekers, including those waiting to find out about their future in this country, are scared and struggling to find the support they need. Fiza Qureshi is the CEO of the Migrants' Rights Network, which has been supporting people affected by what's happening. Tell me about Home Office raids. How do those raids work from the perspective of someone seeking asylum who's the subject of the raids? Do they get any sort of warning, a letter, you know, advance word?
Yeah, so they are meant to be receiving a letter in advance to tell them what the next stage is. So whether that is a dispersal, whether that is a dispersal, a removal to Bibi Barge, or that they have a notice of intent to remove them to Rwanda and therefore they will be detained. But what we are finding is that even if they are given the 10 days, I think, that they're meant to receive to understand what is going to happen next, the process of challenging that is not as straightforward in terms of finding legal aid solicitor or just a solicitor and getting that legal support to challenge that situation. And in some circumstances, we are hearing that they are speeding up the notice to when the actual raid happens. So there is very minimal time for someone to actually even get a legal challenge to that situation.
But the other thing I read recently was that people who were seeking asylum were turning up at kind of what looked like routine appointments and then almost summarily being told, in theory, that they were going to be removed to Rwanda. Are you familiar with that happening?
We have heard of this. People seeking asylum may have conditions of reporting regularly, and that could be weekly, fortnightly, monthly. It could be longer periods. I think once this plan was initiated, there was clearly a process on the part of the Home Office to say, well, as soon as someone comes into a reporting centre, that's at the point at which we issue the notice and maybe even detain them there and then, the concern would be, oh, well, they might evade, etc. It's a really harsh and way to treat people who are coming here to seek protection, right? Like they are coming in, complying, going to the reporting centre, thinking this is what I have to do to ensure that my asylum claim will be considered. And then inadvertently they go in and they are told, actually, this is how we're going to treat you. We're going to put you either on the barge or we're going to put you in a detention centre and potentially send you to Rwanda.
Give us a bit of sort of your direct experience here, because this isn't talked about very much in the sort of mainstream coverage of these questions. Can you tell us a bit about the situation that people seeking asylum very often are in? You know, are they waiting for paperwork or meetings with lawyers? You know, what does the word processing mean to somebody who's in the midst of that situation?
What is meant to happen is an individual come into the country, present themselves to the authorities and say, I want to claim asylum. And what should be happening is that they will have an interview to substantiate the protection needs. They may be asked for further evidence to substantiate what they've said. Then they will be waiting for an outcome and a decision on that claim. In practice, what happens is they are waiting maybe for over a year before they have an interview. We have individuals who waited well over a year just to get their initial interview.
So what do they do in the meantime? What happens in the meantime?
They are in asylum accommodation, just waiting. A lot of anxiety, a lot of issues around their mental well-being because it's just a limbo state that they sit in. There's such a culture of fear that is now being created around these raids. It speaks to the government's kind of rhetoric on this. And I mean, we recently were asked to speak to some young people who are unaccompanied minors, and they are, most of them are under 18, and so not affected by being removed to Rwanda or being put on the Bibi barge, but it trickled down that they might be at risk, and they needed that reassurance that actually, no, they were not affected. To the point where many of them had decided that they weren't going to go to college because they were scared that would be a place that they might get picked up from.
The government has said that the Rwanda bill will act as a powerful deterrent to people coming to the UK in so-called small boats. As of the 21st of May, almost 10,000 people had crossed the channel that way in 2024, above the numbers for the same period in the previous 4 years. So it doesn't look like it's worked. Here's Diane Taylor again.
There's absolutely no evidence that Rwanda so far has acted as a deterrent. We've had record numbers of crossings so far this year. Asylum seekers are more traumatised, more fearful as a result of Rwanda, but it's just one more trauma they have to deal with.
Have you had those conversations with people who are here seeking asylum?
Yeah. I mean,
and when you mention Rwanda, what sort of things do they say?
I think some of them still believe it can't actually happen. It's too fantastical as a concept.
They think it's batshit as well. Bluntly put.
They are very fearful, but as I say, it's not as if they were fine before.
Some people I've spoken to have said it's already a problem that lots of asylum seekers, for various reasons, just drop out of the system and end up living underground. But it's highly likely that the Rwanda scheme will increase the numbers of those people. You must speak to those people quite a lot.
Yeah, I think it's more likely with the refused asylum seeker cohort that completely blindsided all of us when the government announced it a week or so ago, that that group of people, many of whom have been here for 10 years or longer, I think it's more likely that those people will drop out of the system. Yes, some people will go underground, but the whole point of claiming asylum is to regularise your status and become a refugee so that you can live a legitimate life. These are not people who want to come here just so they can work undocumented.
Right, right.
A lot of asylum seekers won't want to go underground. They might have spent years getting here to claim asylum, and they might have paid smugglers $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. The family sold the house to pay the smugglers, or sold their business, so they're letting everybody down.
What was the change you mentioned a moment ago? Just remind us what that change has been and what it means.
The government narrative all the way through, and the rationale for Rwanda, is stop the boats, stop the boats. The only way we can stop the boats is by setting up the Rwanda scheme. Actually, the only people not in scope for being sent to Rwanda at the moment are people who have arrived recently on small boats. And that's because they're covered by the provisions of another bit of recent legislation, the Illegal Migration Act. And reportedly, the government is struggling to operationalise parts of that act. So that's why the current cutoff for Rwanda is June 2023, because people who arrived after that are covered by different laws that the government hasn't
yet.
Well,
so the very cell of the policy, which is to say that these people who you are told about week in, week out, are arriving here on small boats, open themselves up to being deported to Rwanda, simply isn't true. As things stand, the only people who can be deported though are people who've arrived in the recent past.
Yeah, it is. It does apply for people who arrived between January 22 and June 23, but not to people who arrived after that.
Yeah, but that's not the hype, is it? That's not the way the policy is portrayed.
No, it's not the hype. And nobody had ever mentioned refused asylum seekers who absolutely did not come on small boats and cannot possibly be deterred by Rwanda legislation, because they're already here before the Rwanda legislation happened. So that argument falls apart.
Does it get you down reporting about all this? It's such a heinous, horrible thing with all these grim human consequences, and you have to be immersed in it all the time.
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking to see the emotional impact on such a large number of people, and I wish that ministers would be willing to witness the impact of their policies on a very vulnerable group of people.
I don't know whether you can you just give us a sense of what that means directly, like people that you've met and the state that they're in?
I've reported on a large number of suicides amongst asylum seekers and an even larger number of suicide attempts. Some asylum seekers who have attempted suicide have said they did it to avoid Rwanda.
What, and you've had those conversations?
Yeah.
With the people themselves?
What the Home Office either doesn't understand or chooses to ignore is that they're dealing with a highly traumatised, very vulnerable population. And these optics of cruelty policies, in some cases, have pushed people over the edge, people who were quite close to the edge anyway, just acted as a tipping point.
So I've got a clear plan. You've already seen, hopefully, some pictures in the papers and on telly. We've started detaining people. I can tell you the flights are booked for July. Airfields on standby. The escorts are ready. The caseworkers are churning through everything. So all that is happening. And if I'm re-elected as your Prime Minister, those flights will go to Rwanda. We will get that deterrent up and running.
If you had known that the Rwanda policy was happening in the UK, would it have made you less likely to come here?
The way I see it, it's just a game. It's just an election game. They are doing this just because of election, nothing else.
Well, you're absolutely right, in my opinion.
Because of this game, they are making asylum seekers suffer. They are making their own population suffer because of this issue, and they have created this issue for their own population.
And what keeps you going? How do you get through each day?
When I left my country, I was hopeful. I'm still hopeful. Life is going on. Life has to go on. And I will continue as long as I'm alive.
It's been 2 years since you arrived in the UK. If you look ahead 2 years, where would you like to be? What would you like your life to be like in 2026?
Everybody wishes the best for their future. Myself, like personally, would like to have a new life here and create a family and have a good life.
Okay. One question I haven't asked is, how old are you? That's an interesting question.
Must be a solemn.
25 years old.
25 years. Okay. Wow. Okay. You've got a lot of life left ahead of you. Thank you so much for talking to us.
بیستوپیان سال جانی که زور لپیشه زور سپاس بوی که قصد دکلی مکرد
زور سپاس بوی اوش براسی خودتان با من ترخان کرد و توانی من دیخ
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I thank you for giving me a time and allowing me to talk. I think everybody needs somebody to talk about their emotions, somebody to talk about their own problems sometimes. And I thank you for that.
Thank you.
زور سپاس
بوی اوش دستان خوش بکرد در
That was such a sobering, kind of grimly fascinating conversation. What I was most struck by, apart from anything else, was the fact that he's only 25. I mean, you know, when I was 25, I was, what, 3 years out of university. I could barely tie my own shoelaces. And the amount of things that he's seen and awful stuff that he's experienced, and then to come here and then endure 2 years of absolute up and down uncertainty about what's going to happen to him and where his life's going. And yet still somewhere in his mind, there is this sort of optimism that maybe things quite soon will right themselves and he'll get a chance to make a life. Asylum and immigration generally are just talked about in these great sweeping macro terms, aren't they? Clichés like small boats and mention of numbers of one kind or another, and you sort of miss the human beings at the heart of it all. We asked the Home Office to respond to some of the claims made in this podcast, and a spokesperson told us, "The Guardian did not provide us with sufficient information to look into this case. Detained individuals are advised of their right to legal representation and how they can obtain such representation within 24 hours of their arrival at an IRC." We also asked Labour for clarification on their asylum policy and what they would do about the safety of Rwanda legislation if they came to power. They referred us to their 5-point plan to reform the asylum system, which includes creating a new elite border security command to smash the gangs upstream, ending hotel use, clearing the Tory asylum backlog, and speeding up returns to safe countries, reforming resettlement routes to stop people being exploited by gangs, a new agreement with France and other countries on returns and family reunion, and tackling humanitarian crises at source to help refugees in their region. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to Politics Weekly UK wherever you get your podcasts, and even better, leave us a review. Thank you to the JCWI, Fiza Qureshi, Diane Taylor, and the two people who we spoke to in this episode who remained anonymous. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby. The music is by Axel Kakoutier, and the executive producers are Maz Ebtahaj and Nicole Jackson.
This is The Guardian.